All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, here all alone in the dark baby dungeon for a spooky Halloween episode. John and Chuck, I assume, are dead. Anywho, I will be joined shortly by guest Sam Esfandiari to discuss the great unspeakable evil that is the Golden State Warriors and their satanic quest to go 81-1. Anyway, tiny bit of disclaimer for the interview. Sam asked me about real estate prices in Nashville, and here's the thing. Everything I said might be wrong. That is not my specialty. Anyway, before we get to the interview, I wanted to let you guys know you have one day left in October, Halloween, to write an iTunes review to win a box of Fan Essentials for October. There are only 5 reviews for the month, I think. So if you write one today on October 31st, there's very good odds of you winning a box of your favorite team's gear from fanessentials.net. And while shopping at Fan Essentials, remember to use the code FBBF, as in Fast Break Breakfast, and get 30% off your order. FanEssentials.net. Get all the essentials you need. Also, check out the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. They're our podcast partners over on the Step Back. They do a great job of covering NBA history. Make sure you subscribe and listen to them as Rich and Jason dive into the past and uncover stories and stats you either forgot or never knew. I just listened to their last episode, Michael Jordan's 23 Worst Games. It's definitely worth checking out. So go subscribe to Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. My guest today is Sam Esfandiari. He's a contributor for Warriors World, which I've heard is one of the oldest running blogs covering the Warriors. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is, Keith. Since Vontigo Cummings, Keith Jennings, all the glory days of the Warriors before they turned into the supervillain team.
Yeah, the supervillains that they are. Well, again, Sam, thanks for coming on. And how are you doing this morning?
Pretty good. Just had a breakfast burrito. Great way to start the day.
Oh, breakfast burrito. I like this. Volunteering the breakfast information. That's a man on his game. I appreciate that. is that one of your go-to breakfasts? Is that a favorite or just what happened to happen today?
You know, I'm moving this weekend, just apartments across the city. And so it's more like, what can I finish off in the fridge? What can I make in the fridge? Because, you know, you don't want to like move, you know, just trying to eat everything here. So I have minimal to move.
Oh, that's nice. So that was a self-made breakfast burrito.
Yeah, some eggs, had some tortillas and some salsa. Nothing too fancy, but, you know, got the job done.
That's perfect. And do you live in the Bay Area? So are you moving across San Francisco or somewhere?
Yeah, I'm just moving apartments in the city. So, yeah, I live in San Francisco. Used to live in the East Bay. Pretty much been in the Bay Area most of my life. So, yeah.
Really nice. I hear that housing market's very exciting over there.
It's softened a little bit, but that's relative to what it was. It's not compared to the rest of the country. It's still, you know, absolutely nuts. But right. The situation was just a good situation.
Right. I live in Nashville, and so our city is like the real estate's going up a lot, and everyone's like, "Man, I can't live here. I can't live in this neighborhood. It's like our rents are crazy." And it's like, "Have you been to big cities? Like, like we're still good.
How much is like a one bedroom or a two bedroom run in Nashville?" Well, out of curiosity.
It depends. I mean, obviously, neighborhood. Obviously, I would say like a 1,400 square foot home would probably run you now $300,000 if you want to live like in kind of the couple miles of the city. So,
okay.
You know,
yeah, you're in a financially more equitable space than us out here.
Yeah, I know.
So, everyone knows that.
It's absolutely true. I mean, it's like it used to be, I want to say you used to be able to rent, you know, like a one bedroom, like 800 square foot apartment for like $400 a month. And now it's closer to 1,000. So people are struggling, but still it's not, you know, it's not big city problems yet.
Yeah. I'll leave my pricing out of this.
Yeah. You can DM me your rent later if you want. All right. So you say,
if you want to cry, well,
have you been, how long have you been covering the Warriors, or how long have you been a Warriors fan?
Well, let's see. I'm 31, and so I grew up on the team. I want to say been going to games for 20 some years, starting as a fan as a little kid, and then been contributing at Warriors World for 3 years now, and on some other blogs before that, some other Warriors blogs. So probably contributing, I don't know, 6-7 years. Yeah, that's my bio, but it's still the weirdest thing to me because I'm used to them. You know, I look at the Sacramento Kings, and that was my Warriors fandom for a majority of my life. You know, passionate fan base, always has like some element of promise. You know, like, I mean, we never had anyone like Boogie Cousins, but like there's always something, you know, like a young Gilbert Arenas, you know, Chris Webber, something like that. And then it just, you know, goes, it just blows up in the worst way.
Right. So, outside of the title year, what was your, maybe your highlight moment of those?
Gotta be, We Believe.
Yeah. Well, I would say, not like specific moment and not counting the Baron Davis dunk over Andre Kirilenko. Like, is there one moment that stands out?
Let me think about it for a second. Favorite moments. I do remember exactly where I was when Antoine Jameson and Kobe Bryant had 50 point. They dueled 50 point games, and it was, if I remember correctly, Jameson did it on a back to back. He had 50 two nights in a row. I was all in on him becoming the next big thing, and then, you know, I mean, right, I wasn't a bad player or anything, but certainly not a franchise player.
Right.
So
right.
That one will always get me because it was, you know, Kobe. I mean, Kobe's Kobe. And this, even though this was when he was young, I mean, he'd still, I think he'd won a title already at that point, and he had all the hype and, you know, next Jordan and all that stuff. And it was, you know, it was those little things. And then the Warriors went on to win 25 games that year.
Yeah, exactly. So, who's your all-time favorite Warrior? Do you have one?
I mean, keeping everyone off this team because,
yeah, they don't
by
count.
By the time they retire, they should, you know, Steph should be every Warriors fan's favorite because without him, none of this happens. But going farther back, let's see, maybe Jay Rich. I loved Gilbert Arenas the short time he was here because I was kind of crazy guys. I'd probably go Jay Rich was just a fan favorite because he gave everything for the team. There's just, he has a ceiling talent wise, but like the effort was there every night, and he did a lot of stuff in the community. It was just a likable guy. I wish he could have been on the Warriors when they got better, but you know, such is life. He was the only player stuck with the team for like 7 straight years when actually, if I look at it through that whole Kohan ownership, I think he was the longest tenured Warrior. They just turn guys over so quick. You know, someone's the hero and they become the fallen idol because they can't lead the Warriors to playoffs with a crappy roster the next year. So obviously they're the problem and they have to be traded. That was kind of the whole Kohan era right there. And, you know, Jay Rich was there for 7 or so years.
Yeah, that's a good choice. I always had a soft spot for a Donald Foyle. I don't know why. He just seemed like a good guy. I think I heard him on an interview once, and I'm like, man, I like that guy.
Adonal's great. And actually, when I was living in North Oakland, and it's kind of like the Oakland-Berkeley border is very hilly. So when I was living there, I would see Adonal running up this specific hill. It's called College Boulevard every day. And I was just like, he was probably in his late 20s at this point. And I'm just like, that looks awful on your knees. And he's, you know, I mean, 7-footers don't, I mean, it's hard to be that big. And he would just like, he looked like a 50-year-old man running up the hill. But sure enough, every day, see him there. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, turning the gaze to this year's Warriors, you mentioned they're already villains. Now it's a weird transition from the franchise of being bad for so long, and now they, you know, won the title, set the wins record last year, even though last year ended in the massive collapse. But so going into this year, bringing in Kevin Durant, how does this team and how do fans like yourself go about like just even approaching the season where you can't really atone for last year until May, and then you have this entire giant stretch of season in front of you.
So I go through the I have the internal battle of rationally being patient. You know, I can completely tell myself, hey, you're adding one of the best players. You have a completely, I mean, I think they have seven new players, five of which are in the rotation. It's going to take time. You saw versus the Spurs, you know, forget the rebounding issues, just the turnovers and the timing stuff. No matter how good you look in preseason, you just can't, you know, little things like, you know, Kevin Durant passing to Clay, you know, their chemistry could be a little off just because they haven't played under real NBA, you know, game pressure. So, you know, like little errant turnovers and stuff like that. And then there's the other half of me, which is like, I want to see this because it should be awesome once they get going, right? It should be just really fun to watch and just like, you know, we should get at least 150 point game out of them or some half where they score 80 some or just, you know, something where everyone's just going. So it's really trying to talk, you know, talk yourself down and pace it. I remember I was having a conversation with like my dad who started taking me to games when I was, I don't know, 10, 12 years old. And he was just livid. He's like, oh, they should have never got Durant. I'm like, let's not overreact to one game, Dad. But, you know.
So. Yeah. Well, so last year, I felt like last year, the regular season just seemed to be so much unbridled joy. I mean, obviously they were winning. You know, they started with a huge winning streak. They set the record. And then they just kept scoring points. And it seemed like a lot of fun. Coming into this year with such big expectations and adding Durant, does that remove some of the joy? Because it just seems like the wins are expected?
Not in the Bay Area. Everyone in the – well, after Tuesday night's thumping by the Spurs, everyone's kind of, you know, on ledge right now. But, like, in general, the vibe in the Bay Area has been like a party. It's like, oh, my God, we won 73 games last year, won title the year before, and now we got Kevin Durant, you know? If you saw the preseason games, they were literally a party. The crowd atmosphere was really laid back and just like, you know, it's a preseason game versus playoffs. Playoff games are super tense, but that's been my read of the atmosphere here. But it seems like there's a little bit of anxiety too with it.
So. Well, it just reminds me of this is a cross sports reference. I went to college at Florida State, like what, 15, 18 years ago when they were awesome every year. And it was a thing where if the team didn't win by 5 touchdowns, people weren't really happy.
Right.
So it's like, I wonder if now the Warriors, it's like you watch the Warriors and like, what is a fun moment as a Warriors fan where you've been so spoiled or accustomed to winning by so much where it's like, you know, do you enjoy like a 8-point win over, you know, like a not good team? Or is it just kind of like, whoo, that was close.
Yeah. I mean, speaking for people in the fan base I talk to and everything I see around the team, it's just like they almost want to fast forward everything to the playoffs. You know, there's a sense of left it on the table last year and, you know, this is cool, but like we really want the rematch with, you know, with the Cavs, and then the Spurs come in and do that and remind everyone, hey, you might not get that rematch if you don't go about your business. So,
yeah. And I think a lot of teams have that. That's one of those where, again, the veterans, like the fans, we're excited about opening night, but you don't know if like the Warriors are like, this is fun. And then you're like, oh, this is not, we're getting beat. Oh, well, this doesn't matter. And I feel like we're going to see that for actually, you know, I guess a handful of the veteran teams who are always there. Like, I feel like I'm gonna see that from the Clippers this year, where there's going to be some games where they just lose, but it's like this team, after 5 years of winning 55, 60 games, it's like, ugh, this is the regular season grind. We're not going to get like totally up. But how much did that opening night setback kind of adjust your expectations, say in regards to win total for the regular season?
So I pegged their win total at about 66. And that might've been on the high side. I kept fluctuating between the idea that there's too much talent, that they're going to win games by mistake where they're not even trying. And then, you know, Steph or KD just gets hot in the fourth quarter just because they can. And the conservative estimate, which is, you know, they're going to rest, they're going to blow some games, and then they're really going to come into form in the second half, but win like maybe low 60s. I don't know that it adjusted my expectations as much as it put in the, you know, rational response, which is, you know, it's going to take time. Zaza had no clue what he was doing, for example. You know, David West was throwing passes to the second row all game. And then you start realizing, like, you know, outside of the core three who were here last year and Andre Iguodala, it's kind of a completely new team. So they're going to need a little time.
If they don't, you mentioned David West and Zaza Pachulia. If they don't get much more production out of those guys, which those guys are proven NBA veterans, and obviously David West, you know, all-star, but they're both older as far as NBA players. And if they get dinged up, if Andy Varejao gets dinged up.
Oh, God, Andy.
So how do you think, like, the team will react? Like, if those guys, if they're not getting any front court play, do you think they can just kind of coast through the season and not worry about it? Or is that something they're going to have to try to address? And I don't know how they would even address that.
Well, I think there's a lingering, let's see who gets bought out midseason, and maybe we get lucky like the Heat did with a Birdman.
Oh, yeah.
But beyond that, I think versus, let's say, 2/3 of the league, it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Orlando's an example. Ibaka, Vucevic, very strong front line. Not going to make up for the difference that they're just going to get pummeled on the perimeter, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the Spurs are one of the better teams in the league. You know, like, if they go up against the Clippers and Zaza and West are either dinged up or just completely awful like that, you know, they might lose that game because that front line is good enough to, you know, compete versus the Warriors perimeter if they're not, you know, if they're getting zero resistance, right? They're good enough to win the boards by 20, which is what the Spurs did. So I think it's going to be one of those things game by game. There aren't that many teams who can guard the perimeter and abuse you inside the way the Spurs did. So it's not like on a game in, game out basis, it's not the biggest worry. But Kerr actually had a pretty interesting quote yesterday. He said, when you have kind of a newish team, Spurs are either the worst or the best team to see first. And he goes, you know,
yeah,
they're the worst team to see first because they'll expose every hole you have when you're a new team and you know, you don't really know what you have. And then he goes, but then if you look at it from a building and a process standpoint, it's kind of good to see that and to kind of be slapped in the face and realize, you know, we have a real problem on the boards and there's no one big man on this roster who's going to be able to, you know, pull a DeAndre Jordan or an Andre Drummond and just, you know, completely own the glass. It's going to have to be by committee.
Right. Do you think is Damian Jones, I know he's the best I can find out, he's supposed to come back maybe in December. Like, do you think when he gets healthy that he will be stuck right in that rotation to see if he can contribute some more on the boards? Or do you think, again, it's just going to be based on who's dinged up, who's healthy, like whatever Kerr's feeling?
At some point, he's going to get some run. Just the nature of the season. I'm not too optimistic about him playing a role this season. He was already kind of a raw project. He's less advanced than, let's say, Festus Ezeli was as a rookie. And if you remember, Festus was actually pretty good for the Warriors in 2012 before those knee injuries. And then his career kind of, you know, it just kind of went wayward since there, or he could just never stay healthy. So I see him as a project. My best case for him would be he gets some run here and there and he gets a little more confidence, and next year he's a real contributor.
Yeah, that makes sense. I definitely remember Festus back in his rookie years because I watched him play a lot of college basketball at Vanderbilt. And so I was always blown away, actually, that he became a NBA contributor, and especially a contributor to an NBA title team. But anyway, so if the Warriors only get kind of like their top seven or eight contributing, and if they're getting sub replacement level from everyone else, like from Ian Clark and below, do you think that will affect their ability to win a title, like to win playoff series? Or do you think the incredible talent of like that top four and then like, you know, Iguodala and Sean Livingston will be enough to win the title?
Well, they're going to need to get something from Zaza and David West, or they're going to need to get something from two big men on the roster. I don't know who it is. Right now, the one I'm most optimistic about among the young guys playing some sort of role is Looney. Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised. In retrospect, I'm not surprised he didn't get a run versus the Spurs. I would expect to see him start getting a little more playing time in the next couple weeks, particularly when they play non-Spurs teams, you know, when they play younger teams or Kerr's comfortable letting him, you know, play through some mistakes. So I do think they need to get something out of that. They obviously don't need to get as much out of their big men as the other contending teams because they're so good on the perimeter, but they can't just get a nothing, in my opinion. They got nothing from, you know, the moment Bogut went down in the finals, they got nothing out of their big men. If you looked at game seven.
Yeah.
Festus and Andy lost that game as much as anyone, you know.
Well, I mean, they didn't put themselves in the game.
Yeah, pretty much. So I don't want to go there. I've had enough rants on.
No, that's fine. I'll go there. No, but I do like how low key, based on the opening night loss, I just asked you if the Warriors can win the title, and you didn't blink an eye. So what's one thing you're looking forward to this season that's totally unrelated to playoff success?
Well, aside from, I want to see if they can just completely irrelevant but cool in the moment thing. I want to say the record for points in a quarter is 57.
Okay.
I think they can beat that. I don't think they can beat the NBA record for points in a game because Kerr's just going to pull everyone if they got like a 30-point lead in the third quarter, you know? But they can – I think they're good. At some point they're going to have one of those first or second quarters where Steph, Klay, and KD are just all hitting and there's nothing you can do about it. And it just keeps going. And I think that's going to be pretty cool to see. You know, it'll suck for the opponent. But
Well, when's the first Rockets-Warriors matchup? Because that might be fireworks in the first quarter of just teams inbounding, shooting threes, and no one really caring, putting hands up or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's actually in mid-November.
All right.
Remember correctly. So we're going to get an early look at that. Later in the season, I'm hoping the Warriors actually get the defense dialed in a little bit.
Yeah. How worried are you about all the kind of the smoke around Draymond Green's kind of behavior attitude? Ethan Strauss wrote that big feature on him that was talking about how made him seem like a live wire or a ticking time bomb type thing. So how much concern do you have about Draymond?
Well, so the team has basically towed the line that everything in Ethan's article was accurate, but they didn't agree with the tone in which he wrote it.
Right.
So none of the stories he put in there were fabrications or false. Like, he did do that stuff. Some of the stuff behind the scenes, and like, I'd heard that stuff too. Whether it's a concern, I'm on the fence, but I lean towards no, because I don't think they can win. If you replace him with a really good but non-fiery big man, I don't know that they can win. I think Steph and Klay have kind of and KD too. They have a little bit of a casual approach and sort of need that little slap in the face and aggression that Draymond brings. And he does walk that line, and he did cross the line and potentially cost them the finals. I mean, that – if he plays in game five, who knows, you know, maybe then Bogut doesn't get hurt. Maybe they pull that one out. You just don't know, you know,
right.
You can look at him as just as big a reason for why they lost, but they also don't get there without him. And you forget when Steph was missed eight playoff games, Draymond was averaging something like 20, 10 and 10. All the defense. So I see him as a necessary elixir to the team.
That makes sense. And also, it is
but
funny.
It is something to monitor. I'll put it that way. I'm more of the let's keep an eye on this, but let's not overreact to it just yet. That's my point of view.
That makes sense. So wrapping up, we haven't even focused that much on Kevin Durant. He recently had a weird, I don't know, a leaked video type thing that really reeked of hey, come watch me do this thing and then act like I'm not being observed. Where he's just kind of talking to himself about all this disrespect and shooting. So what's the latest take on that? Is it just kind of him forming a narrative, or is it just normal, this is what NBA guys do who are real obsessed with basketball?
I mean, I thought he was shooting a Nike commercial, to be honest.
Exactly.
it kind of looked like all those, like, Kobe or Jordan commercials from, like, you know, 10 or 25 years ago, where they're just like narrating, I missed 1,000 shots, but you know, something like that.
There absolutely was a director for what this leaked, you know, thing. Like,
it was corny. I don't take it as anything. I mean, I think two thirds or majority NBA players are, you know, they're convinced that everyone thinks they suck because they read their Twitter mentions.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. It does show, insight to KD, to stuff we've already known, which is kind of that he's, I don't want to say image conscious, but like a little insecure about what people say about him. And it's a little bit in his head every now and then.
Yeah.
So, I worry about that stuff versus Cleveland, for example, because he does not have a good history versus LeBron.
Right.
And LeBron can get in his head. And then there's the natural fact of, like, the one thing the Warriors may be susceptible to is ultra physicality. And there's no, you know, LeBron's as physical as they come and KD's not physical. So it is, I don't know. It's something. It's funny to joke about. But it does show a little bit into his character, I guess.
Yeah. And also, do you think his character is reflected by his sudden outburst of tattoos of random recording artists? Is there any insight you can give into his latest tattoo outburst?
I mean, he's got a lot of tattoos. He had a lot of tattoos before that, if you remember.
Yeah, he's like a low-key under the jersey tattoo man.
Yeah, the business tats. I think he was the first one who coined that term. Yeah. You know, no tattoos on the arms so he can still get the sponsorships, but tatted up all over his chest and back.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He's, you know, Oklahoma City is kind of notorious for limited media access.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of the way we probably viewed Durant was through that lens where it was very team, the team lens, and they made sure nothing, you know, controversial, and not that that's controversial, but like nothing aside from like, we practice hard, we work hard, gets out.
Mm-hmm.
So this could just be, you know, maybe who he is, and he's kind of exploring himself a little bit, and the Warriors are the opposite. I mean, they'll give any joker a press pass. I mean, I don't know why I've ever got one. So, it's just a complete opposite philosophy. So they'll let Kevin do whatever he wants, and people ask him questions, and he seems to respond to anyone who asks him a question, sometimes to his detriment, you know, sometimes it's better to, I think LeBron's got pretty good at figuring out the questions he needs to answer and the ones he doesn't need to answer. And, you know, and when he wants to send a message to the media, he lets you know it with his little subtweets and stuff like that. So I just think it's kind of it comes across a guy kind of exploring himself. I'm not thinking too much about it. I don't, you know.
That sounds good. So you're not too worried overall. Big picture stuff, like, this is going to be a fun ride. Still the title favorite. Everything's going to work out kind of okay.
I think so. I think the biggest thing I want to monitor is kind of the way they progress. And this is really Kerr's biggest challenge. You know, he came into a team that enjoyed playing with each other and was kind of the scrappy upstart who'd made no noise. You know, I don't think anyone thought that the Warriors' core was good enough to win a title when they were, you know, about a 50-win team. Everyone's like, this is a good team, but they're missing, you know, XYZ player. And then Steph goes from being an all-star to a superstar, and Draymond Green comes out of nowhere. And Kerr, you know, he kind of rode that lightning in a bottle, put them in the perfect position. And, you know, they were the darlings, right?
Yeah.
Now he's got, first off, he took over a team that had continuity anyway. You know, they'd played together under Mark Jackson anywhere from 1 to 4 years together, depending on which players you're thinking of. So he didn't have to worry about, like, necessarily them knowing each other. He has to now with so many new players. And then the expectations and the burden and everything. So it'll be really interesting to see how he guides that, how he develops them, how he keeps them, I guess, focused on the day-to-day and getting better versus thinking big picture. It's not the easiest thing for a coach to do.
Understood. All right, very, very last thing. This is a personal passion project of mine that I'm just abusing your time to talk about. Going back 2 years, I'm a Memphis Grizzlies fan. In the Western Conference semifinals, when the Grizzlies went up 2-1 on the Warriors, I was self-aware enough to realize this was the apex of my Grizzlies moment. Like, I soaked it all in. I was like, it's all probably downhill from here. But one thing that bugs me about the way conquerors write history is the narrative of the Warriors won the playoff series because they came up with the defensive idea to not guard Tony Allen. And that's like the prevailing history of that thing. And I happen to be one of the world's leading Tony Allen apologists. And point of order, I don't know what your perspective was. Tony Allen pulled his hamstring in that game 4 and only played 15 minutes. So, and they didn't play game 5. So I'm curious, what's your memory of that? And how scared were you after the game 3 when they were up? And then what's your memory of the Tony Allen defensive strategy?
So I was a little shook after game 3. Memphis and the Spurs were the two teams that, you know, scared me. They had success versus the Warriors all regular season, you know, and their styles were just diametrically opposed to how the Warriors wanted to play, and they knew how to get under their skin. I mean, game 3 specifically, I remember Steph and Klay were just throwing errant passes, and, you know, Tony Allen was in their head.
Yeah.
So I was a little shook, and I was like, you know, we should beat them, or the Warriors should beat them. They're a better team. But, you know, Memphis clearly has the mental edge and the physical edge. So, you know, I'm a little scared here.
Right.
Now, on the Tony Allen thing, it's more that they just made the decision to switch Bogut onto him.
Right.
And basically make Bogut a rover. So I do think that mattered. I do agree with you. Tony Allen's pulling his hamstring was an issue too. I guess I would have liked to see how that played out if Tony Allen didn't do that. I mean, I think the Warriors would live with him shooting outside jumpers and Bogut just kind of rovering.
Yeah.
But,
I would say there's absolutely truth in the fact that they put Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen and then they went on a run. I think it was the second quarter. Like, they went on a run that
late first.
Okay, yeah. So they went on a run that game that coincided with Mike Conley missing all his shots and Jeff Green missing all his shots. And then Tony Allen pulled his hamstring and could not cut and, like, beat Bogut. So then they took him out. So I just, like, yes, they made an adjustment that worked for a single run. It was like 12 possessions or something. But then now history has been written that like Kerr and Ron Adams and everybody, like, they fixed it. Like, they didn't card Tony Allen. And I'm like, no, Grizzlies were 2-0 when Tony Allen and Mike Conley played. No one ever remembers. No one outside of Memphis or my house in Nashville ever remembers that. But anyway, that's my own personal passion project. All right. Well, hey, Sam, thanks so much for putting up with me and coming on our show. Is there anything you want to plug or tell people where they can follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Sam Esfandiari. I assume you're going to add it to the post. So,
oh, yeah.
So no one has to worry about spelling that. But then check out warriorsworld.net, longest standing independent site covering the Warriors. Been around since the late 90s, early 00s. Can get good content there.
Sounds perfect.
And that's it. Thanks for having me, Keith.
Yeah, Mo, my pleasure. Yeah, so you guys follow Sam on Twitter. He's a very good Warriors and basketball follow. Not too serious. Make some good jokes. It's how I like my Twitter. All right, anyway, hey, Sam, thanks a bunch. Have a good time moving, if that can be possible, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Keith. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks a bunch to Sam. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter at Sam Esfandiari. Remember, if you like our podcast, we have started a Patreon to help cover some of our expenses. And if you are a Patreon contributor, you can be in a fantasy basketball league with us, and you can join our game chat over on our private Slack channel. And there will also be exclusive audio content coming up, like John, Chuck, and myself talking about probably movies or Westworld or whatever NBA things don't make the cut of the regular show. We also have the goal, if we get enough funding, to remove those pre-recorded ads. So head over to fastbreakbreakfastpodcast.com or patreon.com/fastbreakbreakfast and check it out. And if you like, pay us a buck or two a month for what we are doing over here. All right. Anyway, thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at fastbreakbreak. Like us on Facebook. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.
Best believe.